chapter, but we'll get up. Yes, you know that we had 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita total. So far, we have discussed 6 chapters, isn't it? Dhyana Yoga we finished. In the Bhagavatam, when we discuss, we have to discuss Bhagavad Gita also. And Dhyana Yoga is what we finished last one. So, from 1st chapter to 6th chapter, we have discussed, which is refers to, generally referred to as Karma Yoga. The first 6 chapters is generally spoken as Karma Yoga. The next 6 chapters, that is the chapter 7 onwards, from chapter 7 onwards, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, including the 12th chapter, is Bhakti Yoga. Is Bhakti. So, when you study these 6 chapters, you will see that's a completely different presentation of Bhakti. What we thought as Bhakti, now we are thinking Bhakti is that every day going to temple, putting the tilak on, chanting 16 rounds, and wearing a dhoti and kurta, having a nice shikha, and going on a harinam. They are all there in the Bhakti. But the way Krishna presents the Bhakti to us in these 6 chapters, will give you a completely different understanding of Bhakti. And that is Parabhakti, Sudhiya Bhakti. That's what Krishna is talking about here. So this Bhakti, and after the 12th chapter, from 13th to 18th is Jnana Yoga, is knowledge. Isn't it? Knowledge is discussed in the last 6 chapters. So Karma, Bhakti, Jnana. So those 6 chapters from now on, what we are going to discuss from today, will be this Bhakti Yogam, but in 6 different titles it comes. From different angles, Bhakti is understood. Krishna is presenting to Arjuna what is Bhakti. That is why it is. And you can see the first word itself is knowledge. Bhakti with knowledge. Therefore, in the Sanskrit title for this chapter is Jnanam Vijnana Yogam. And Bhakti is presented through that, isn't it? Bhakti is presented through that, Jnana Vijnana Yoga. Jnana Vijnana Yoga, Bhakti is presented that way, Jnana Vijnana Yoga. So, that is why, let's read through that first verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacham
Shri Bhagavan Uvacham
Maya Saktamana Partham
Maya Saktamana Partham
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Yathajnya Sisi Tachrunu
Yathajnya Sisi Tachrunu
Shri Bhagavan Uvacham Maya Saktamana Partham
Maya Saktamana Partham
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam
Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Asam Shayam Samagrammam
Yathajnya Sisi Tachrunu
Yathajnya Sisi Tachrunu
Maya Saktamana Partham Yogam Yunjan Madashrayam Asam Shayam Samagrammam Yadha Jnasyasi Tatshrano. Krishna's translation. Now hear, O son of Aprita Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness in me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Free from doubt. So Krishna begins this chapter with a lot of new words there. First Krishna started with this word Jnanam. Vijnana Yoga, the title at least. What is Jnanam? What is Vijnanam? That we have to understand. So, Jnana Vijnana Yogam, Jnana Vijnana Yogam is the subject. Jnana Vijnana Yogam is the subject. It's raining, that is Jnanam. It's raining, that is Jnanam. And knowing that the rain is Krishna is Vijnanam. See? And spiritually, that is how you understand. It's raining, that is Jnanam. But that, don't look there now, it's not raining.
suddenly
it's not raining. It's raining. If I say to you it's raining, that is jnana. But if you understand that it is Krishna, then it's vijnana. Do you understand the difference?
Yeah.
See, to see things in the creation and recognizing Krishna there, that is vijnana. To see it with your eyes and say, oh, it's raining there, that's knowledge, yes. That's not rejected. But that's only jnana. But it's not vijnana. But it's not vijnana. So, in order to have that, first thing, what the sages have told us that, when it's raining, watch that. Rain, when it's raining, watch the rain and keep listening to the sound from the rain. This is how they realized many things, by just by observing the nature. Unfortunately, in the modern life, we don't have that, isn't it? We don't have that such a lifestyle anymore, observing anything in this world. That's completely out of our habit now. We don't observe anything. If it's raining, all right, so what, take an umbrella or a raincoat and go. Or if it's raining, so what? So we'll curse the rain, first thing. And then, oh, it's always raining, we'll curse the rain, isn't it? But that's not how the older times people lived. They observed the rain. They observed rain. Because last chapter, if you remember, it was Jnana Yoga, meditation. Isn't it? How to create dhyanam inside a person. This was the topic in that sixth chapter, which we are discussing now in the Ekadasi Skandam also. Krishna spoke about bhakti in depth. For what? To prepare for dhyanam. To create meditation mood inside. How to meditate. People will ask, how to meditate? They go for a course for meditation. And after the course, they'll go there after 10 hours working in the office, doing business or making all kinds of shoddy deals. And completely polluted mind, they'll go for meditation course. How can you do meditation? When you go into meditation, what you will see there is all your thoughts, whatever had throughout the day, that will come up in the meditation. Is it not? It'll come up in the, you can't do anything about it. So meditation means there is a preparation behind the meditation. You have to prepare yourself for that meditation. Dhyanam is necessary. So, we cannot sit quietly. This is our biggest problem, isn't it? We cannot sit quietly. So, but meditation means sitting quietly, to sit quiet. You tell someone, keep quiet, just stay quiet. It's impossible today, isn't it? Impossible today. So, it is not concentration. Meditation is not concentration. The concentration is favorable for meditation, but concentration is non-meditation. That you have to know. Concentration is non-meditation. And why I'm saying all these things is, the seventh chapter, after the sixth chapter, which is meditation, sixth chapter is meditation, if you don't understand what dhyanam and meditation means, the seventh chapter will be difficult to understand. It's more difficult. So in the sixth chapter, Krishna is saying about meditation, dhyanam. And dhyanam means able to sit without any chitavati. Without any chitavati. Chitavati, you know what I mean. Chitavati means not allowing any thoughts to enter. Able to stay completely in trance. Completely into trance. That is dhyanam. That is not possible. That is not possible. So concentration is not dhyanam. Concentration can help dhyanam. But that silence inside, after the concentration you reach a state of silence inside. That means there is no more thoughts coming, flowing behind. All thoughts have come to a stop. And that is why that mere existence in that state is called dhyanam. Mere existence in that state is called dhyanam. So, so, when you hear the sound of the rain, when it's raining, it is difficult for us to take attention of that, isn't it? We have our mind, because there is so many thoughts coming through the mind, we don't give attention to that, the sound of the rain.
We don't give attention. We don't take notice of it. It's heavily, sometimes we say it's heavily raining. We look at the water and say, ah, it's heavily raining. But the sound that's coming from the rain, we won't attend to. We won't take attention of that. So, because, why is it like that? Out of all the senses, the most difficult thing is the ear, to hear something. The most difficult thing is the ear. Seeing is very easy, because it sees something. So, and Shravanam, or what, you know why I'm saying this, is Shravanam process. In the Bhagavadam Shravanam, Bhagavad Gita Shravanam. Shravanam is an important thing in the spiritual life, isn't it? Shravanam is the one, the first one spoken in the nine processes also. So Shravanam is not hearing, but it is listening. I don't know whether you get that difference. Hearing and listening is two different things, isn't it? Those whose mother tongue is English, they can understand it easily. Hearing and listening, they are two different things. You have heard something, but it need not stay with you. But you have listened to something, it should stay, if you have properly listened to it. So Shravanam is listening. This is the best way you can present, talk about Shravanam. So Shravanam is listening, not hearing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, hearing is not listening. Hearing is not listening. So, the sound of the rain, the sound of the wind, and even silence inside, there is a sound for that. Even the silence inside. Because that experience that creates inside us, that is what you have to take into account. When you are listening to something, the impact it has on us is important. That means very fine things, subtle things in life, just like the rain, like the wind, these are all the subtle things of the material elements in this world, isn't it? When it rains, you are actually hearing the sound of the water. Out of the five material, earth, water, air, ether and fire, you know the five material elements. Out of that, you are hearing the subtle nature of the water there, how it creates a sound. Similarly, the subtle nature of the sound is what you experience through the pure material elements called wind. Wind. Every material element in its pure form creates an impact on you. That's what those who are observant, those who are giving attention to it, they will notice these things. But these are things which existed in the ancient times. They gave a lot of attention to the creation like this. And therefore, their realizations also are a lot more on a higher level than what we realize from this world. We are people who now, you know what's the problem with us. We don't take notice of anything in this world. All what we do is now, we fit camera all over. Everywhere camera. You know, we have a prayer to Narasimhadev, isn't it? What does that prayer say? Vahir Narasimho, Hidahe Narasimho, Narasimhavadim Sharanam Pravadi. On the front side there is Narasimha, back side Narasimha, on the sides Narasimha. Similarly, we have got camera in the front, camera in the back, camera on the sides, everywhere. And when we live in a society like this, the natural effect what we have from the material elements is never taken into account. Ordinary, in the past, in the ancient times, sages went to the forest. Or even in the villages, the older people who have developed spiritual understanding of life, they will always find a great relationship with the nature. That was very normal with human society. Due to industrialization, technology and our way of life and all, we have lost that link with the nature. Therefore, they respected water, they respected the forest, they respected, without any of these conferences on environment and green belt and green plant, they lived a life in a natural way and they didn't disturb the material nature. All over the world, it was like that. But as much as we disconnected from that and came to this jnanam of the rain, we'll say there's water, but we won't understand what vijnanam is. That's how we lost that vijnanam. Only jnanam stayed with us. So similarly about the wind also in the same way. In similar situation you can see, when we see the rain, we will complain, for how long has it been raining? When is it going to stop? We'll blame the English weather, and we'll blame the winter, and we'll blame everything when it rains, isn't it? And At least they say that when it rains, you should hear when it rains. If it didn't rain, we'll complain. Straight away, oh, it didn't rain. Already they started complaining now. Only for 2-3 weeks we had a little sunshine. They'll say, no, they're going to say water shortage and about the hosepipe ban and everything. They'll start saying about that. So, if it rains, we will say, oh, it's raining. If it didn't rain, then we will say, oh, it hasn't rained. We'll complain either way. So, when it rains, we won't give attention to it. What we will do, we'll go and sit in front of the TV. If it rains, we won't give attention to the rain. That is how we are now. No connection with the nature. Practically, we have completely broken any connection with the nature. We just exist in this world as though I'm forced to be here. I don't know anything what goes on. I don't want to know anything. If it suits my life, I will take it from this world. Otherwise, I don't want to know anything about this world. And same thing, you can see it has happened in all human relationships also. People don't talk to each other. As soon as our technology developed with the mobile phones, everything, you'll talk through a mobile phone, but when you see a person, you can't talk to him. Find it difficult to relate with someone. Similarly, when you travel in the car, they will wave at you. But if you see him in the corridor, they will turn their head off. They can't talk. Very strange things happen like that. Why is it like that? Because we have lost our natural behavior. What we are in a normal way, what we would have had if we were living in a proper, normal conditions of life. That is gone. So if you are not talking in front of the television, watching the television, we'll be talking something else. So, otherwise we will curse the rain. Without all these things to hear is the most important thing. So, if it is possible, we should go into the rain and experience the rain. To understand what it is like. In the modern world, because everything is so protected, we have never get an opportunity to understand what it is the material nature is. When we didn't have all the facilities like today, today the child goes to school in the car, or gets dropped by school bus or whatever it is, and goes to work, even they don't want to use the buses or trains because then you have to go to the train station. Mm-hmm. Whereas the car should be parked in the right in the front of the front door, so you can jump in, get in the front door and start driving right up to the point where you can park the car and get into the office straight away. So like this, everything you can see when you observe this, that the natural way a human being meant to live in this world is not happening anymore. That's been taken away. So, so when you observe things like this, you will see many things in nature. If you observe, you will notice that there's a lot of things happening in the nature. Few people give attention to some extent due to various reasons, but many people, majority of the people, don't have time. They just don't have the time. Just like when you live in a multi-story building, you know, 12th floor, 15th floor in a flat, in a big city like in Bombay and all that, it is very difficult to live with the nature, isn't it? You have no contact with the trees, plants, the earth, everything. So what will happen, sometimes when you look through the window from a high building, suppose there is a tall tree next to that building, you will see cages built in, bird cages in that tree in the top of the tree, because you are also in a very top level, isn't it? When you look through the window, you see some birds have their nests there. And in the heavy rain, especially when you get heavy rain, you will notice these huge trees will start swinging a little bit this way, that the branches will swing. And on that branches, the birds have gone and built their cages, and these cages also start singing. And inside that cage, they have got the babies. The birds have got their babies inside. And they are also swinging along with that. But the bird sits there comfortably, completely under Krishna's shelter there. All these things, if you notice, you will see how this material nature is working in this world. So much protection Krishna has given to them. When the bird is building that cage there, the bird knows that there will be rain. Bird is experienced all that. Bird knows that there will be thunder, there will be showers, everything. And it will wet the babies. In spite of all that, she puts all her effort, the male and the female bird, puts all their effort to make the cage there because they find the security there in that place, secure place, to have the family, and they bring up the family there in that cage. So when you observe that, you can see that the nature on its own has certain ways of doing things in this world, organizing things. Similarly, if you look, at least I can tell you in Lechmohit, in the night, foxes come out. Early hours in the morning, say 2-3 o'clock, if you look through the window, you will see foxes going through the streets. But you don't see them during the day. And some of these foxes are quite big. And you wonder, where do they take shelter? And they have their own holes there through which they escape. And they manage to protect themselves somewhere. And in the night time, they know when to come out and they know when to go back. So many things in the nature, if you observe, you can see that nature has its own way of controlling things. So you can see here, so the place where we think is insecure, just like that bird's cage. I'm saying all these things as an introduction to that seventh chapter, because if you understand this introduction, the seventh chapter will be a lot easier to understand. Seventh chapter is a difficult chapter. It is a difficult chapter. Because Krishna is talking about something, bhakti through jnanam. That's what the subject is. Bhakti through jnanam. Jnanam, jnana yogam it is. So, therefore all this introduction to that. So therefore, when you look through the window and see in the nest, that I'm thinking it's completely insecure. But for the bird, it is very secure. Bird is feeling security. I'm not feeling security there. So, those birds, they are living there. In that rain, they get wet. They get wet also. So, although this phenomenon is going on in this world continuously, you may not have noticed this any time. Because that's how it is, isn't it? Our life, we didn't have the time to give attention to it. Such a simple thing. We think, why do you worry about all that? That's bird's problem. Why should I worry about it? That's how we think about it. I'll worry about my flat or my board. So similarly, we would have never given any attention to that. Similarly, sun rises in the morning. And poets have discussed about the sunrise in all languages. Poets have spoken about sunrise heavily. They may not have even seen the sunrise, but they would have written about it. Similarly, about the moon, full moon, Kalidas discussed this in the Kalidas creation. And full moon is a great attraction for poets, isn't it? And similarly for sunrise also, sunrise, sunset. All these things, when they are happening in the nature, they give attention to that. So, but we would study all this, what Kalidas has spoken, what Shakespeare has spoken about moon, about sun, we would have studied at the school, but we would have never thought about looking at the sun or the moon. This is the problem. We will hear what Kalidas has written about sunrise or sunset, or Shakespeare has written about sunrise or sunset or moon, but have we ever thought, let's look at the moon today, what it's like? And we would not do that. And on the other hand, if there is moonrise, whether we recognize about the moon's presence, we hardly recognize the moon. But we will know everything what Shakespeare has said, or what, because for the examination we have to write that, what Shakespeare said about the moon, or what Kalidas has spoken about the moon. So, in the ancient times, when I'm talking about the sages particularly, they gave importance to all of these things. That is how first they made their connection with this world. Yeah? And you will see in all their prayers also, famous prayers, talking comparison with the moon, comparison with the sun. When talking about gopis and beautiful personalities in the Bhagavadam and all, they will say their face like a full moon. Comparison with the full moon. They'll talk about it. There is a Raga Chandra Samana Gandhi Vadana. This is in the Lalita Sahasranamam, talking about Lalita Devi or Sri Parvati. It says there, Raga Chandra Samana Gandhi Vadana. Her face is like a full moon, blossoming like a full moon. So, if you want to appreciate that, when the prayers are saying to us, Yaga Chandra Samana Gandhi Vadana. You must have seen full moon, only then you will be able to understand that. But if you have never bothered to look at the full moon, whole life, and you are taking all this Vedic literature and start reading, and he says, why is he talking about this full moon? What's the big deal? You will say like that, isn't it? Because why? Because the reason is that we have no understanding what this full moon is all about. What's the full moon so much to talk about? Same thing with the rain, same thing with the forest. And in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, there is a description of the place where Kardama Prajapati was performing austerities and penances. You know, there's about 20 verses Vedavyasa has taken to describe the forest. 20 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, just to describe the forest where Kardama Prajapati was performing penances. He talks about the birds, he talks about the water, he talks about the lakes, he talks about the sky, he talks about the trees, he talks about the everything in the forest. We start thinking, what's this so much to talk about this forest? And we are not feeling any connection with it. Why? We haven't experienced it. We never gave any importance to it. So because we are like that, whenever they say something which are very subtle, we are finding it difficult to relate with it. This is the problem with Shastram and us. We grew up in this machine culture, everything through machinery. As much as possible, avoid any human contact in every possible way. Every possible way. They make it so difficult that that you don't require any human contact anymore. And you start, and with that background, we are coming to study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's where the problem is. You got the Oyster card, so you don't have to buy a ticket now. Oyster will help you. You get through. And then this side Oyster, the other end also Oyster. So even that possibility of meeting someone, a possibility of smiling or having a word with anyone, that's gone there. It's out, isn't it? And in the tube, everyone is busy with their newspaper and they won't even tell, because everybody is frightened to talk to each other. Or if somebody has, they got the mobile phone to keep themselves occupied. They'll talk on mobile phone, but they won't talk to next to you anything. They're frightened. How they will react, we don't know. So there's so many different things. What I'm saying is that how, in an unnatural way, we have moved away from the nature. Made ourselves. Raghava Chandra Samana Gandhi Vadana. It says like that. So, so sunrise. At least we have sun rising every morning now. So we are saying, oh, sun is rising too early, I can't sleep. Let me close thick curtains and a nice bug drop so that he won't disturb my sleep. That's one. And sun is not setting, I have to sleep early, so I close my curtain. So there is no possibility of seeing the sunrise or the sunset that way, isn't it? When sun rises, by then, we have, by the sun has risen at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in the summer, but we want to get up at 8 because work starts at 9. So we have to be there at 9 o'clock. So that means 8 o'clock if you get up, it's more than enough. Half an hour by the tube and 15 minutes of bus or something. 10 minutes for bathing, dressing and breakfast. Everything 15 minutes. So 9 o'clock at work. And 5 o'clock the job is over or 6 o'clock it's finished. Then catch the tube, get home. There is a football match or whatever at 7:45. They've fixed everything properly. In the time to start, we should be ready with the, after the food or with the food, watch the football match, whatever that is. So, what I'm saying is, a life we live like this and we expect to understand what the sages have spoken. And that's where the problem is coming from. So, if people say, have you seen the sunrise? Yeah, I have seen sun. 2 years ago I have seen one, saw the sun rises in the morning. This is the answer coming. Have you seen today when the sun is rising? Oh, no, today I didn't see the sunrise. That's the same thing. So similarly, the beauty of the sunrise, the beauty of the moon, the sound of the wind, and the unlimited nature of the sky, which never comes to our attention, isn't it? Suppose you go to an open space, like in the beach or somewhere, when you walk around, you see the unlimited nature of the sea, unlimited nature of the sky. Immediately, it has an impact on you. Many people go to the seaside only for that reason, just to walk around and see that unlimited nature of the oceans. And it makes you feel something different. immediately it has an impact on us. Everyone experiences that. If you are a little bit sensitive, you will have it. Some people won't. There also they'll take the laptop. They'll be working there, sitting on the seats. Let the family enjoy, I will do my work. They'll say, like, even after going there. So they will not have any impact. They'll say, what's there? See, that's it. So what does it matter to me? My business is something different. So this natural relationship with the material nature has gone, and therefore it has become difficult. Similarly, the smell of the earth. You see, all these things are related to material elements, five material elements. Because in this chapter, we are going to discuss material elements, isn't it? Later on, all material elements we are going to talk about. And material elements has its own, what is known as tanmatra. Tanmatra. In creation process, they are important. Why? Because it is through this tanmatra that is the quality of that particular material element. Just like earth. What is the quality of tanmatra? Is smell.
Smell.
Smell, isn't it? Tanmatra is smell. What is the quality of the wind? The sound.
Sound.
So similarly, all the five material elements has its own what is known as tanmatra. Pancha tanmatra they are called. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. These are the tanmatra they are called. Sound, touch, form, taste and smell. The five things. Shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandham. These five things are related to the five material elements. And those five material elements, they display their tanmatra, their potency at some time. For example, suppose you had a very hot day, hot sun, and the earth is very dry. Earth is very dry, particularly in the hot conditions you can feel, in warm weather conditions. You had a hot sun for quite a few months, and suddenly one day, heavy drop, rain comes. What happens first thing? When the rain falls on the ground, the smell from the ground comes very strongly, isn't it? Everybody has experienced this sometime or the other. That is Punyogan, the Prithivyamscha, Krishna says that. Prithivi, Mother Earth, her quality is Gandham, smell. You tell an ordinary person who doesn't give attention to that, the Mother Earth has a smell. He won't understand what that smell you are talking about. They'll think, what's the smell? No, smell is the quality, tanmatra of the Mother Earth. Earth's tanmatra is smell. So Punyogandha Pradhimyamscha Tejaschasmi Vibhavaso. Later on you will see in the Bhagavad Gita that verse coming. So every material element has its own tanmatra. Tanmatra there. So you will see there that the quality of the earth is this smell. Punyogandha Pradhimyamscha. So and therefore in the Bhagavadam it says Gandhavadhi Prithivi. Prithivi, Mother Earth is Gandhavadi, is full of smell. So, similarly, if you want to know the taste, where is it coming from? Water, isn't it? Water. If one is drinking coffee, tea, fruit juice, and things like that, he will never know the taste of water. He will never know the taste of water. Of course, nowadays the water is also water is also, when you get to the pipe, it is chlorinated water. But if you see the fresh water that is coming from the spring, and if you drink that water, the taste of water, it talks about the taste of water there. The taste is experienced at that time. So, and there is a sweetness of that water. Why we are not experiencing the sweetness is due to various other tastes, what we have, our buds in the tasting buds in the tongue has got used to other tastes so much, and due to that we are unable to experience that sweetness of the water. For example, those people who are eating a lot of hot food, chilies and things like that, who are very hot food, who is to that kind of food, they find it very difficult to eat food which is not hot enough. They'll always complain about that. But what's happening is, even if you give them very nice vegetables cooked with yogurt or coconut and very tasty preparations, if you offer them, they will not find any taste for that, because they'll say it's not spiced enough. They'll say it's not spiced enough. So that's problem. That's how the taste is in the tongue. So similarly, the taste of the water is forbidden for, you are not experiencing that taste because of the problem with our habit of tasting. So those who have, if you look at the nature in this way, very alert and full of alertness, if you observe like that, give attention to the material nature, the person who gives attention to all that, he will become the material nature within himself. In such an extent, you will identify with the nature, because it is that same material elements is within us. We are made of the same thing, isn't it? This gross body is nothing but those material elements. But then we don't think like that. We are thinking that's something different, I am different. I am body, mind, intelligence, ego, all other things operating on different level. But the sages who have seen this, they have understood that. That is how they understood that we are made of the same thing from that. Upanishad says that you are nothing but the same thing, what you see outside in this world. Mm. And what one who gives attention to all that, at some particular stage, he will become that. He will become the material nature. And that is when you start realizing, God, 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 we are talking about. This inquiry of the God doesn't have to be anywhere else. We have this understanding that God is not here anymore. He is living some up there watching us, ready to punish us or watching me, keeping an eye on me, what I am doing. Whether if I do some good things, he will take a note of that out there as well. And if I do some bad things, he is ready there with the gun to shoot me. And he is waiting for me to get back there. So then some people say, I don't want to go, I'll stay here. Because if I go there, he's going to punish me. So all this fear, this is how religion has developed in different ways, isn't it? So, Upanishads are telling us, Isha Vasimidam Sarvam. Everything is Ishvara, everything is Krishna. So to bring that understanding that this creation also is Krishna, it's not different from Krishna. So sages knew that identification with the material nature is not a wrong thing, because it's also teaching us about Krishna's existence in another form. And that attraction will never destroy us, unlike our attraction for machinery and all the other technology. This is a natural, pure presentation of Krishna's creation. Isn't it? Material elements, trees, plants, and water, and air, earth, fire, all of them in the nature, if you observe, they are Krishna's direct manifestation in this world. And if you observe them carefully, naturally we get that relationship with them very easily. So, Isha Vasam Idam Sarvam. When the sages saw a tree, when they saw a forest, and what the first thing is, they said, this is all Krishna. This is how they started realizing the truth. They are realizing the truth. They were not thinking, first thing, sages didn't say like this, that, okay, we are looking at the tree. And they were not only saying that Krishna is only the tree. Shyamasundara form, what we worship in the temple, Krishna's flute in the hand, two-handed form, with the yellow garment and also with the peacock feather, with the forest flower, the garland with forest flowers. That form is given to us to worship him, to relate with him better, because our conditioned state is like that. But prior to that, in the Upanishads times, all these things didn't exist. They started like this. They have accepted everything in the creation as Krishna's presence in there. So, So they say here, so that when they form this mantras in the Upanishads, they are called mantra drashtava, isn't it? Drashtava means they invented the mantra. It is that Upanishad mantram that has come about later in the Upanishads form, which Krishna has also taken and put it into Bhagavad Gita. You see, when you read Bhagavad Gita, if you start taking it as an instruction manual, it is very bad. It won't help. Many people take Bhagavad Gita as like an instruction manual. Instruction manual is like that, isn't it? Like you buy one washing machine, they give you an instruction manual. If you just follow this instruction manual, you are perfect as far as washing machine is concerned. But if you start taking Bhagavad Gita and follow like the instruction manual, it will not work. Because behind this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has packed a lot of things inside that. And that is all this realization of the great sages and great personalities. So that is why I'm saying these things, that all this background is important to understand many things what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. So there you will see some questions like this in the Upanishads. They were so expert in utilizing the material nature in self-realization. Chandogya Upanishad says, a Brahmana boy comes to learn the truth from his spiritual master. Actually, it is what we have to do today in modern world, is just to tell the people what actually spiritual life is. Forget about developing them spiritually, it's difficult now. It's gone so far out. But at least to tell them what spiritual life means. For example, as I mentioned before, in the past, it was not difficult to tell someone that who is a guru. Everybody knew what a guru means, yeah? Everybody knew what a guru means. In the modern world, everybody is a guru. This is the difference. Anybody can be a guru. You do a course, there is training courses for the guru now, I understand. They're running that. You can ask anyone, I'll tell you. Training courses for the gurus, unheard of. And it's happening now. So, this is, in the past, what it was that those who want to inquire about the truth, they will go to a person who, by very nature, his quality and the lifestyle and the realizations are such, a few people will approach him for realizing the truth. And when he goes to them, he knows very well what to expect. The child knows that the life from now on is austerity, penances. And he had complete, absolute faith in the guru. And he will completely accept his authority when he goes to him. And he knows very well, you have to read the description of the guru's quality in Viveka Chudamani and books like that. Then you will know what a guru means. And he will, you are taking his shelter with complete understanding, I am taking your shelter, please show me the truth. And whatever he does with you, you are willing to accept that. So there he says to him, one Brahmana boy goes in Chandogya Upanishad, he goes to him. So the spiritual master looked at him and he understood that by little conversation he could understand that this boy doesn't require a lot of teaching. They were so capable in knowing. He's a matured fruit, ready to realize the truth. And they were capable of knowing that. So he says to him, take these cows to the forest and look after them. That's all what you require. And spend there sufficient time, and when they become 1,000, come back to me. When these cows become 1,000, you can come back to me, he says to them. So they take this boy, he didn't say anything to him. Says, why is he sending me like a cowherd boy to look after the cow? Nowadays, if anybody tells, the disciples will say to the guru, look, I don't like that service, don't tell me that. I'm only a preacher, I only preach. And I need this. This is all modern guru disciples. So, there, the surrender was such, that he told him to go, and he knows very well, guru knows the best. That was his approach. So, nowadays, guru also don't know, the disciple also don't know what he's doing. So, it makes the job a lot easier. So anyway, disciple goes to the forest with these cows. And what did he do there in the forest? Chandogya Upanishad, if you read, you can see there. He stayed in the forest, observed the forest, and simply living in the forest and observing the forest. He milked the cows when he wanted to eat something, fruits from the forest, milked the cows and drank the milk, and he stayed with the cows. Simply with the association of the cows, simply with the association of the forest, ultimately he realized the truth. Can you imagine that? He realized, self-realization happened to him. And when the cows also were like that, the cows one day, one of the cows comes up to him and says to him, we have become 1,000 now. We can go back. And he goes back to the spiritual master with all the cows together. Whole background of Chandogya Upanishad is like this. And it is a wonderful thing to read that. No shastram, no instructions, nothing. All he was told to go and look after these cows in the forest, and he comes back fully self-realized. And he comes back and the spiritual master asks the questions to the disciple. Have you realized the Brahman? No, he says, I have. The answer comes from him. He got the truth. I got the truth, he says. So, why I was saying this was that in the ancient times, this relationship was well known to the disciples as well as the guru. Guru also won't waste his time unnecessarily, and he will only accept that many disciples whom he can properly instruct. This was another important thing. He won't go and accept thousands and thousands of disciples and thinking that he's going to save every one of them. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. It is not possible. So they will only accept that amount of disciples whom they felt. That is why there were so many Gurukulams, and they were called, addressed also in that way. And there were personalities who had that state of realization and who wanted for the welfare of the rest of the world. They did that as a service with their realization. They were poor, extremely poor, but they look after these children so well and provide them all the facilities for their spiritual. Their spiritual life alone was the matter of concern for them. So, after this, what we say is, so what it says, rishis are, sages are saying at that time, that rishis are saying, rishi says like that, brahma tat vrikshaha, brahma tat vanaha, that tree is Brahman, that forest is Brahman, and that is Krishna. It is manifestation of Krishna. And it is raining, but without any opinion, what good is that about the rain? We have no opinion about the rain. On the other hand, when it rains, they used to think full of bliss that they are coming from that rain. They are seeing that the rain is giving the water to the ground and it satisfies all the other living entities. Trees need the rain, and plants and trees, they all need the rain. So they are observing the rain and saying that Krishna has come in this form of rain, and that rain is helping all these living entities to sustain their life. That is how they look at it. So that srishti, that rain is Krishna's another form. So normally when they look at that rain, they are not looking there and see, is Krishna there in four-handed form or two-handed form with conch shell, disc, lotus flower. So that's only form I know. That's the only thing I've seen in the temple like that, Krishna standing there with the flute. Is he there in that rain? He's not there. So how? That's not how they saw. They saw that is another form of Krishna. So Krishna doesn't have to come to this world. Actually, Krishna's presence in this world, if we know how to understand that, then you will know that srishti, how it is, then that is Krishna's srishti or creation as it is, as such, it is Krishna's form. It is Krishna's another form. The sky, how it is, that is Krishna's another form. The mother earth, how she is, that is Krishna's another form. And the water, how that is Krishna's another form. When the water is flowing through the river, take it that Krishna is flowing there, in that water, in that form. So here, we have also known that Krishna is Satchidanandam, isn't it? Satchitta Anandam, eternal, blissful and full of knowledge. So we may say, oh, we are not able to understand it like that when we see this, all these material elements. So only problem is that we don't know that, that's all it is. That's the only problem. That it is up to us to remove that ignorance from us. By observing the nature. Not by rejecting the nature. That's what we are doing. See, in our process of inquiry, in our self-realization, what we are doing is, we are rejecting everything and limiting to the temple, limiting to the one form and thinking that that's all Krishna is, nothing else. But learned sages who wrote the Upanishads and gave it to us, they observed the nature and began from there itself their study of Krishna. They started studying Krishna from there. It is Krishna's another form. That is how they accepted the nature. But it is our duty to remove that ignorance from us. Krishna is not going to do anything about that. Because in self-realization process, these are steps at different times. We have broken, lost our connection with the nature, to re-establish that connection with the nature and see Krishna's presence in the nature is our responsibility by educating ourselves properly. Just like going to the seaside, seeing the ocean, seeing the sea, respecting Krishna in that way. Seeing the world, rain, air, wind, or water, or fire, all Krishna's manifestation, sky, Krishna's manifestation. If we see like that, it is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Beginning of Krishna consciousness. So, this self-realization is a mystery, isn't it? Self-realization, we talk in different words. You can see the terminology is different. Some people will say self-realization. Atma sakshatkaram it's called. Some people will say Brahma sakshatkaram, Brahman realization. Some people will say like that. Some people will say Paramatma realization. Isn't it? Paramatma realization is Paramatma, super soul. Some realized people will say realization of the absolute truth. These are all different words used to express the same thing. In other words, realization of the truth, realization of the soul, realization of the Brahman is all one and the same. Is one and the same. The problem is, till you realize it, you won't see anything. You will not. And once you have realized it, you won't see anything else except that. This is how self-realization works. It's a mystery. It is a mystery. Till you realize the self, you won't see anything. You can call it self-realization, Brahman realization, or Paramatma realization, Bhagavan realization, whatever realization you want to call it, you can call it, but it won't make any difference to you. It remains as a mystery to all of us, isn't it? Because even after studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam also, you can come up with the same question again. I'm not experiencing anything. Nothing has changed. I'm still the same. You may say that. Same thing will happen again. So if it is happening, what Krishna is saying is that the self-realization, Brahman realization, all this is a complete mystery. Why is it a mystery? Mystery is like this, as I mentioned before, that till you realize that, you won't experience anything. Once you have realized that, you won't see anything, you will only know that. You only self-realize state. That's the only thing that exists at that time. This is how self-realization is. Just like, once you have realized that you are not this body, I am spirit soul, you have completely realized, for example, then for you, body doesn't exist anymore. Body is finished. Okay, sometimes in an extreme, in an advanced state, you are not completely freed from the body. You are still a little bit in the body, but to a large extent you have gone beyond the body. But for vyavaharam, for doing some business in this world, you have to utilize this body. Because without body, you can't do vyavaharam, isn't it? You know what I mean? Vyavaharam means business in this world. All businesses, eating, sleeping, and walking, and things like that. That's all in relationship with the body. So long as that body is there, vyavaharam will be there. And in order to do vyavaharam, you have to accept that body. You have to accept that body, that's the problem. So that's why he says here that we are thinking that Krishna is separate from all of us. Krishna is separate from all of us. And this is what first thing, as much as all the material elements are part of this creation, when we come to understand that only the soul exists, only Krishna exists, we don't exist after that in the form of body. We don't exist anymore in the form of the body. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you remember, at one stage, Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, those people who are identifying with the body all the time and who are thinking about going to another world after death, I have only one thing to say to them. Do you know what that is? It's a very two powerful verses Krishna has spoken in the Ekadashi Skandam, in the 10th chapter, verse 32 and 33, I think. He says there, that the Yavalsyal Gunavaisamyam Tavan Nanatamalpana Nanatamalpano Yaval Paradandrayam Tadaivahi. As long as these three modes of nature is working, you will see this variegatedness in the nature. Variegatedness in the nature. Now we are seeing everything separate, isn't it? What do we say separate? Separate, for example, the different trees, different plants, different buildings, and everything what you look is separate for us. Everything separate. Why, how do we perceive everything separate? This is important because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly Bhagavatam, Ekadashaskandam, and also Bhagavad Gita, this chapter 7, which is very closely linked to 11th canto, the difficult thing is that Yavalsyal Gunavaishamyam Tavan Anatvam Atmana. The modes of nature is acting in a person, immediately he will feel the variegatedness of the nature. Variegatedness of the nature. So, Tavan Nayanatham Atmana, he says, Nayanatham Atmano Yavad Paradandrim Tadayvahi. Krishna is saying that so long as this variegatedness is existing in a person, he is under the, subjugated by the Maya. He is under Maya's control. Imagine, self-realization means our vision of this world cannot be the same what it is now. It's not that after self-realization, I will still see, today I am seeing the name and the form of everything, isn't it? A tree is there, I see the form of the tree, and I will give a particular name to that tree as, say, apple tree or pears tree or whatever tree. That is the name for the form of that tree, because that's the kind of fruit that it produces, and I have some taste for that fruit, or whatever it is. I have given a particular name to that tree based on its function in this world, name and the form. So my relationship with that tree is with the name, through the name and the form. So Krishna is saying here, so long as your relationship with the world is through these different names and forms, nana tvam, variegatedness will be there. Yavalsyal gunavaishamyam tavan nana tvama alpana. Krishna says that person is difficult for him to escape from here. Spiritual, before self-realization happens, so much change has to happen with inside us. Before that, it's not going to happen. Then he says in the very next words, Yavadasyal asodandratvam tavad ishwarado bhayam. And ta edan samuvasiram temuhyandi shucharpidaha. Krishna is saying, first of all, Krishna says, Yavalsyal gunavaishamyam tavan nayanatum alpana. So long as you are seeing this variegatedness, nayanatum alpano yavad, he is under the control of the modes of nature. Parandra, paradandrata. Paradandra means dependence on somebody. That is paradandratum. For example, we say about this material body, our own body, we are paradandram. Paradandram for us. What is the parandram of this body? If you look at it, Bhagavatam says, Gam dugda doham asadinja bhariyam. Deham paradhinam. Paradhinam means this body is under the control of somebody all the time. It's at no time it's under your control. Have you thought about that? When you are born, whose control? Parents take control of you, your body. So whole of childhood, you are under parents' control. You have no escape from that. When you get married, then another person comes and puts a claim on your body, the wife. Wife will claim on your body. So there is claim from somebody, and so childhood all parents had their claim on you. They say, my son, my daughter, my this, my that. So that is paradandratvam. You are under their control. You can't do anything about it. So that is paradandratvam comes there. And in the youth, when you get married, family, they put a, they have their, what do they call, their, they can claim, they have some claims on you, isn't it? They have some authority, control over you in your life. So that happens. And at the old age, what happens? The doctors, nurses, they claim on you. When you get to the hospital or when you are sick, then they are the ones, or somebody else will, or in the middle, if you are working somewhere, the employer has a control over you. So when do you have any freedom to say it's yours? That's what Bhagavatam is asking. Gam dugda doham asadincha bhayam deham paradhinam asal prajamcha vitam tadutigadam angam vajam heenam maya rakshati dukha dukhi. Krishna says he is the most unfortunate person. Such a person who has caught up in this state. It's the most unfortunate, he says. Heenam maya rakshati dukkha dukhi. Dukkha dukhi is not only dukhi, dukkha dukhi. In other words, he is the most miserable person in this world because he has no freedom to do anything in this world. He is so much controlled by everything. And when you die, this body goes to mortuary or to one crematorium. Or if some people, they throw it away, they dug the grave and they dump it there. Or they give it to animals to eat. In Parsi community they do that. So vultures eat them. Like that. So different ways, this body is never yours. Although I am thinking it's my body, my body, my body, I keep thinking, it's never your body. It's always somebody else's. In all different circumstances. But Maya makes you feel it's yours. This is Maya's role. Maya has to make you feel and keep you busy looking after this body, thinking that it's your body. That's Maya. So, Krishna is saying here, Yavat sar asunandratvam tavat ishwarato bhayam. That means you have no independence. You have no independence. You're always under control. And as long as you are under the control of something like that, you have to be frightened about a God. You have to be frightened about a God. This is how God fearing has started. In all religion, they frighten you with God. Isn't it? They tell you that you have to be frightened about God. In different religion, in a different way they do it. Sometimes in the villages you can see mothers tell the children that you should be God-fearing, you should be frightened about God-fearing, they talk about that. Krishna never uses the word God-fearing. Have you seen anywhere Krishna says God-fearing? Never. Not once he has spoken that word God-fearing. But fearing of God is considered to be God-consciousness in many religions. It is like that. They say consciousness, they were frightened about your own conscience, they say it in a different way. But there's always this fear injected into the people's mind about God. The fear is injected into people's mind. In every religion they do that. They do that. So Krishna says here that Yavasyal Gunavaishavam Tavan Nanatum Atmana. Nanatum Atmanam Yavan Paradandram Tadevahi. After saying that he says, Yavasyal Asunandratum Tavad Ishwarado Bhayam. He says, as long as you have this asodandratvam, asodandratvam means that you have no independence, dependence on everyone else. That means I have my body, body is dependent on so many other people, the employer, the parents, and the family, society, community, all these kinds. Everywhere I am dependent on all of them, and so long as it's there, tavad ishwarato bhayam, you have to be frightened about a God, he says. So, because it is like that, in religion what has happened is, God has become like a terrorizing figure. He is terrorizing you all the time. What are you doing now? I'm keeping an eye on you. So therefore, out of fear, you go to the temple. Sometimes you see people, they forgot to get up in time for Mangalarati. Immediately they go into a panic state. They say, if I don't go to Mangalarati, is Krishna going to punish me for that? Or some kind of fear they create. If I have not chanted my 16 rounds, what's going to happen? That I committed a serious offense. That offense, they keep repeating, it's coming from this fear. Because they have generated a fear like this inside. God is not there keeping an account of how many rounds you have chanted every day. If that is the only business, he will need a very supercomputer there to do that job. Because to check out all the rounds you have chanted and to keep record, that's not his business. He is telling us, Yavatsyal asodandratvam tavad ishwarato bhayam. Your fear of God, like this, that fear develops over a period of time. We become frightened in our own spiritual life. We think that, oh, if I say this, I'm offending him. If I say that, I'm offending him. If I say anything, oh, much offense I have done. And then fearing that you are dying every day. And in that fearful mood you are living. And then you start telling everybody else, Prabhu, don't commit any offenses. And because it's frightening what's going to happen. Therefore, because, and by chance you get sick, they will link your sickness with that offense also and tell you. Then go. Or sometimes if you are a guru, they will say, oh no, that's not, he's so pure, but he's taken all the illnesses from all the disciples, he has got this sickness. So either way you can't escape. You are trapped in that mess. So if this is all spiritual life is, you may as well goodbye to spiritual life. But that's not what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad. Krishna is saying, Yavatsal asodandratvam tavad ishwarato bhayam. You will have this fear inside. Imagine living a spiritual life full of fear all the time. All the time frightened. I can't run this side, I can't run that side. I can't look at the front, I can't look at the back. Everywhere, everybody is frightening you. And in that process, what will happen? After 10, 15 years, you will leave, say goodbye to everything, and you will go, let me have some peace in my life. I had enough of this frightening business. This is what will happen at the end. It happened to many people all the time. Some people could not handle it anymore because they were frightened to death. To such an extent they were frightened after spiritual life. So if spiritual life is going to enter to that stage, Krishna is saying here, Yavatsal, when one said fear, it is not fear. Krishna consciousness is not frightening people. Krishna consciousness, as far as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is concerned, is knowledge and realization. It is not for frightening. Why should we be frightened about anything? Because knowledge is there. Knowledge will protect us, fear won't protect us. That is the main message. Yavatsal asadandratvam tavad isharado bhayam. We are frightened. That bhayam, fear will be there, Krishna says there. Like that. So, tavad isharado bhayam. Bhagavatam says that. So long as you will frighten, you will keep on worshipping Krishna in that way, in that state. So, so in other words, he is sitting somewhere watching you all the time. This is how you frighten yourself, isn't it? So, you're frightened. So, you're sitting somewhere and waiting for Krishna to act now. And you're frightened all the time. This is not spiritual life. We'll discuss it next week. Next week at 1 o'clock. All the rest is Srila Prabhupada.